Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Command Show.
Science 5, Engine 101.
With Andoni Castros and Ed Hadfield. Let's start the show.
All right. Good afternoon. It's Ed Hadfield here, coming to you from California with the Command Show. I don't think Andoni's going to make it onto the show today. He's spending a little quality time with the family, I believe. I'm not 100% sure. So you're going to get me. And that's the nice part about doing this show with two hosts, is that if you don't get one, you get the other, or you get both. Hopefully, we'll be able to bring you some information. So this is the Command Show. And it's been a little while since I've been on. We've been really busy, obviously, out here in California lately. For those of you that are in California, you're probably not going to listen to this live. You're probably out on the front lines fighting fire somewhere throughout the state of California. Currently, I believe we have 8 major fires working in the state. Could be a little bit wrong, but I'll have to check the numbers on that. But I know we have at least a half a dozen or so major fires continuing to burn. My own organization has a number of people out on strike team assignment, Type 3 strike team, as well as overhead assignments. We have line medics, FOBs, safety officers, strike team leader trainees, division group soups, and then, of course, our strike team. Just the other day, we rotated our personnel. They were out for 14 days, started off on the Cranston fire, jumped over to the Holy fire, and then ran up the Mendocino complex. So our people have been pretty busy, and we're very proud of them. We want to say that we want to bring them home safe. As many of you know, watching or the news or following the fire activities, we've unfortunately lost a number of firefighters so far this year, particularly in the wildland fires, and it's been very tragic. As one of my captains said to me the other day, I'm getting tired of wearing the morning band and going to funerals. Been a tough year on us, and has been a really tough year on us in Southern California. One of the things that obviously we're dealing with is not only the line of duty deaths, but the line of duty deaths associated to cancers and the line of duty deaths that are associated to behavioral health issues. A lot of impacts on our firefighters out there, and we're doing our best to try and get them help. I was just in Dallas at Fire Rescue International, which is the iChiefs conference, and there's a lot of effort being put into keeping firefighters healthy, both from a mental behavioral standpoint and physically healthy. I'm going to repeat this a couple times because I believe in it. I think it's important. But if you are not aware of a report that just was recently published. This was a published report by the National Volunteer Fire Council, NFSC. It's called the Lavender Ribbon Report. Lavender, as in the color, ribbon report. It's best practices for preventing firefighter cancer. It's an amazing report. I would encourage everybody to download that report. It's free of charge, and implement the 11 standards that they have identified as best practices approach to reducing unnecessary exposures to cancer. One of them, I'm going to pull this up here real quick. If you give me a second, one of them I think is just, it should go without saying, and of course I'm probably, hopefully I don't get a bunch of hate mail on this, but if I do, then I'm a big boy and I can take it. But on item number 10. Tobacco products of any variety, including dip and e-cigarettes, should never be used at any time on or off duty. That's one of the 11. That's item number 10. It's interesting to think that as firefighters, we are readily exposed to a host of carcinogens throughout our career that we would voluntarily ingest in any form a known cancer-causing chemical into our body, e-cigarettes or tobacco of any kind. I'm still saddened to see firefighters using smokeless tobacco. Two of my close friends have suffered from cancer, esophageal cancer. Both of them were firefighters. Both of them were regular users of smokeless tobacco. Can we 100% say it was caused by smokeless tobacco? No. Can we say 100% say it was caused by the job? No, but we can say that both of them contributed. So do yourself a favor, do your organization a favor. It's free of charge. Download the Lavender Ribbon Report and implement those 11 standards. Create a healthier lifestyle. Create a healthier workspace. Create a healthier, better organization that is doing its best to prevent cancer of our personnel. And just in case you don't know, in 2017, 65% of all line of duty deaths that were placed by the IAFF in the line of duty death memorial were cancer caused. You know, on top of the line of duty deaths that are associated to hostile events, that are associated to collapse, that are associated to vehicle accidents, don't forget that a vast majority of those line of duty deaths are also cancer related. 65% of all line of duty deaths that were identified by the International Association of Firefighters were cancer caused. This is something we can put an impact to. This is something that we can address and we need to address. So take it upon yourself to implement those 11 standards. I know that my organization, we have implemented on our apparatus hygiene kits that include the wipes, that include actually a small, what's called a rinse kit. Surfers use it. It's kind of a portable shower. It's about the size of a small ice cooler, but it can be quickly utilized for gross decon, or even if you had to strip down to your gym shorts and a decon of a person. We've implemented a number of things to create a healthier standard and a healthier environment for our firefighters. One last thing before I go to our callers who've called in, I want to talk about behavioral health. In our county where I work in San Diego County, we've lost some people because of, unfortunately, some behavioral health issues. What we do know is that there continues to be an impact on our firefighters and their families as a result of these fires and as a result of the hours worked and as a result of a number of things, including health-related issues. You know, a firefighter suddenly finds out he has cancer, and that's an impact financially on his family. It's an impact on his home life. It's an impact on everybody, and suddenly the world starts coming in around them. I'm going to ask that we do a couple things, okay? First of all, it's okay not to be okay. If you feel that you are just not okay, first of all, that's all right. It's okay to have that feeling, but please do something about it. Please reach out to somebody, talk to somebody, talk to me, call me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Call somebody and talk to them. Seek appropriate health from a healthcare professional, and utilize all that is afforded to you. The International Association of Firefighters has a magnificent program. It's also part of the CPF initiatives to enhance and increase behavioral health awareness and training and outreach to all of our employees. I know that the International Association of Fire Chiefs in association with the IAFF are lockstep and hand-in-hand in making sure that our employees have the help that they need. So if you know somebody that's struggling, reach out and help them. If you're struggling yourself, let somebody know. And I guarantee you, you'll have more help than you ever expected. The impact of working so many hours, the impact of exhaustion, the impact of being away from the family is something that we face and we deal with, and we know it's challenging. And as fire chiefs, we balance the needs of the community, the needs of the region, the needs of the state with the impacts of that we know are at home. But please seek the help that you need. Don't make a permanent solution for a temporary situation. So that's all I got for that today. So anyway, we got two outstanding people that have called in, two of my absolute favorite people in the world, a couple of hard chargers. I like to say that in a good way, they're a couple of pipe hitters. They're coming out of the chutes, putting out a lot of training out there. If you follow them on any level of social media, these guys are all over the place doing a lot of training and really passing on the craft of firefighting and the fire service and the brotherhood and the sisterhood and the pride in the profession. So with that, Jason and Matt, welcome to the Command Show. How are you?
Doing good, Chief. How are you?
It's good to be here, Chief.
Good. Yeah, good. Well, thanks for calling in. So what's going on up in your guys' part of the world? Because I can say here in SoCal, San Diego is known as the cul-de-sac of the state, right? You know, we're at the tail end. We don't get any help from the south, and we get nothing from the west. You know, surfers don't bring a lot of hose to the fire. And coming out of the east, the Imperial County, and that's pretty barren. Great group of guys out there, but you know, if we're going to get a strike team, it's going to be from Phoenix, and it's going to be a ways. So we send everything north, and when we do, inevitably we end up kind of struggling a little bit. That's why the whole issue with de-risk and pre-positioning of resources up and down the state from local government was so important for us to get funding from the governor. We got $25 million from the governor this year for pre-positioning of resources at local government levels outside of what Cal Fire does. And we need that because, as you guys probably saw, you know, we had the Holy Fire, which was burning through Lake Elsinore, really hitting a bunch of homes hard. Social media had some really great saves. The guys were truly on the front lines of truly attacking those fires on the front lines and saving homes. And that it's kind of cool now with everybody that has video cameras on their homes and all that stuff, that firefighters could actually let the homeowners know remotely that their homes were saved and stuff like that. So there's a lot of great success stories, obviously down here. Fortunately, up in Northern California, we've lost some people, we've lost some homes, and obviously we're losing a vast amount of our natural resources. So how are things going with you guys, and how are the fires impacting you, and what's new?
Well, gee, we just, our Type 3 and crew just rolled back in today, 28 days on the Ferguson up there out of Yosemite. That was our third deployment this year. We did a crew swap at 14, and then the relief crew and the engine came back today. The entire strike team came back today. It's been rough up here between the Ferguson, the Mendocino complex, the car. you know, it's been a rough summer so far. You know, thoughts and prayers go out to, you know, all the Cal Fire brothers and sisters and their family, and, you know, the Redding Fire Department, a good friend of mine and brother Travis up there, you know, they're dealing with the loss of one of their own from the car fire, and, you know, the U.S. Forest Service. It's just, it's been a rough summer so far, and I don't see it slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah, you know, kind of close to home, the individual from Redding that unfortunately passed away all too soon, he was actually a Firetown alumni. He had taken our truck academy at Fresno and taken a couple of our other classes. Great guy. You know, so sad to see him go. You know, and I know that they're struggling with that, and so it is sad. It's sad to see that, you know, that happen. And the unfortunate aspect is, you know, the fires are just getting started for the year.
Yep.
It's been a pretty tough year all around for the fire service. It just hit so hard and fast and all at once. An example, my agency, I can't even keep track of where everybody is. We just got type sixes back. I believe they were from the Ferguson. But everything happened so quick. The only thing the way I can judge who's gone is by the amount of reserve rigs we have in service at this point. There's just too much happening this year.
Yeah, you know, it's we knew it was going to hit like this. We knew it was going to hit hard up in the north, because we had kind of that monsoonal moisture down south. But even with that, we kicked off the Cranston and the Holy Fire pretty hard down here. You know, we had 2,000 acre fires, you know, probably three or four of them. We had the West Fire that was down in Alpine. It was about a 6 hour fire that took, I think, about 60 homes in 6 hours. You know, that one didn't even make the nightly news in Los Angeles. It was just, oh, there was a fire in San Diego, and, you know, 60 or so people lose their homes. Not a big, you know, you know, it's kind of sad when that's the case. But, you know, definitely when we get closer to September, October, it's going to hit hard down here. We know that.
Yeah, I think we'll see a shift a lot of the resources heading, you know, south of the Grapevine. About that time, as, you know, as long as we can get these fires up here wrapped, give them to bed, and hopefully cross our fingers nothing else big torches off up here.
Keep them crossed.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, I don't want to say it's going to be the, you know, worst year ever, because that's never the case. All years are bad, but at the end of the day, it's going to be a challenging year. And that's what I think we're faced with. Now, you guys are definitely out there. You know, you're seeing it. What are you seeing differently as far as fire behavior and that?
Well, what I've seen, you know, just how erratic the fire behavior has been. You know, even last year with Santa Rosa, and now this year with the Mendocino and the car, it's just the erraticness of the way the fire is burning, creating its own weather. You know, I don't know how many times the news has reported, you know, actual fire tornadoes, and you know, it's just the weather has played a huge part, I think, with these last, you know, handful of big fires that we've had. And it's not, you know, like the Ferguson, you know, burn it up in Yosemite, it's burning in, you know, it's in on the Fed land, it's out of the SRA. It's, you know, people kind of like, yeah, we have those fires, you know, every year. But to see the type of fires that are coming out of, you know, Lake County and up in Redding and Santa Rosa, it's just, it's incredible. I mean, I was pretty young when Oakland Hills touched off, but, you know, I can just imagine that, you know, you can almost compare kind of Oakland Hills to some of that stuff that's going on up in Redding and went on in Santa Rosa last year. You know, talking to Chief Kitchell, you know, when those fires touched off, the first person I texted was Wes just to make sure he was okay. And, you know, being able to talk to him and, you know, in Fresno about it and, you know, cars that were overturned, they thought was just from the wind, but scientists were saying, no, those cars were actually picked up and dropped out of the sky. So it just goes to show you the kind of weather and wind events that we're having.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you look at the best way that I can describe it is the fire behavior isn't matching the weather. You know, in the past, you get punched out for a call, and you look at the temperature, the wind speeds, everything else, and then the area that you're going to, it just doesn't seem to matter this year. You have to be on your toes 100% of the time, regardless of what the weather's saying, because the fire behavior is just extreme all year long, it seems, this time.
Yeah, you know, I don't know for an absolute fact, so I'm going to quantify that statement before I make it, is that I believe that given the BTUs that are being generated by these fires because of the fuel modeling, right, that the BTUs are so high that the extreme fire behavior is partially, in part, driven by the higher amount of BTUs. You know, when you look at what happened in Santa Rosa, while there was nothing that I've heard that would verify this, I think the fire tornado, and I think they had it on the radar as an F3 on the car fire, the one that unfortunately took the life of the firefighter from Redding. They have that on video. That is not a fire whirl. That is a true fire tornado. And, you know, for that to basically be generated by the incident itself is incredible. And, you know, I'd love to sit down with some people that are modeling these and stuff like that, because it's so interesting to us to think that we are seeing fire behavior that is driving its own weather patterns that are more extreme than we've ever seen before. And the only thing that I can attribute that to is the BTUs, and of course there's probably other things, but when you look at that, you think, okay, you know, in 1964, that same Santa Rosa fire occurred, right? You talked to Wes. That was the 1964 fire. It burned the exact same pattern. No different in San Bernardino when they had the Panorama fire, and then back in the early 1990s, they had the Grand Prix fire. It was the same fire, same exact fire. Fuel, weather, and topography. The topography doesn't change. The weather, maybe it partially changes. But what changes is the fuel and the fuel modeling, right? So what was the difference from 1964 to, you know, 2017 in Santa Rosa? Houses. And they're a fuel model. So why was it more, why was it so extreme? Why was it so violent? Why did it literally pick cars up and place them 5 miles away? You can only imagine that the only thing that could do that is some type of incident-driven wind event, i.e. a tornado. And you know, not talking these little fire whirls that we've all seen. We're talking an actual tornado. So I know the one in the car fire, they actually have it on radar. That's pretty impressive. And that's what our people are dealing with. I mean, even the Holy Fire and Lake Elsinore, you look at some of the impact that when it made a run on those houses on the Canyon Rim, I mean, it literally hit them like a freight train. And that's a lot different than what we've seen before. So I think we're in for a long battle. I don't think this is going to change any. I think the bark beetle infestation and the tree mortality throughout the state of California is contributing to this, because those dead trees are nothing more than fuel, right? And I don't know the exact numbers, but it's extreme, the amount of bark beetle infested, tree mortality, tonnage that we have throughout the state. I mean, it's like tens of millions of pounds of dead trees. So it's going to be pretty crazy.
Well, and you're right, Chief, with the BTUs, now, we go to a structure fire, one or two rooms going off, we can throw 160 gallons a minute at it, overcome those BTUs. But these are guys that are on type threes or type ones with, 500 gallon tanks, they're out there with a 30 to 60 adjustable GPM nozzle on an inch and a half single jacket. We're not able to get the GPMs to overcome the BTUs, aircraft. I think aircraft has played a huge role, late last year and this year. But with, it seemed like, over the last couple of weeks, there was one or two new fires popping off a day. There's just not enough aircraft to go around. And, I've seen pictures from the Holy Fire. These guys are in the backyard of this house. I'm assuming it was an inch and a half single jacket with a wildland nozzle. And like you said, it hit the back fence of this house like a freight train. And, we don't have, in the wildland setting, we don't have the GPM to overcome those BTUs.
No, you're absolutely right. And the interesting point of that is that when we start having these big fires, we're going to run out of aircraft quickly. And as great as the VLATs are, there's only so many of them. And, their turnaround times, you start running them up and down the state, and you're going to start to get, those apparatus are going to start taking a beating. And I have concerns as a chief officer of, those apparatus, because, those VLATs are older apparatus to begin with. And I hope to God I'm wrong, but at what point in time do we have a failure of one of those?
That's true.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Everything's getting older. Locally, as our fleet, with my agency, we have apparatus issues as well. Everything's getting old, and it's just a matter of time before it starts to fail. And the same goes for the, Cal Fire's Air Attack and stuff like that. Let me just say, too, thank God for Air Attack. These guys have saved me. I know me personally in my agency. I work in Tulare County, and we have the highest tree mortality rate of any county in the state. We hired a crew just to take these trees down and get rid of some of these fuels that we work in all year long. But the Air Attack guys are great, man. They've saved me a ton of work. You get these fires, you think that there's just no way we're going to catch these things, and then here comes Air Attack to save the day. And so I can't say enough about them, and I'm extremely lucky that we have a Cal Fire unit really close and an Air Attack base super close. So they're on almost every fire we get really, really quickly. But you're right, Ed, it's something to think about. Like, when are these things going to start to fail? They're getting old. They're getting dated. You don't get much news of new aircraft. It's very rare that you see anything like that in the news or in the papers or even talking to the air guys. They have the same complaint. So you're right. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I know talking to Kim Zagaris from OES, he said that the state, the governor did budget for a host of new aircraft for Cal Fire, which is great. I mean, they need it. But, again, it's as with anything, it's an apparatus. And the more you use it, the more you put it under stress, eventually, these things are going to fail. And I just, again, I hope to goodness I'm wrong. But, the more fires we have, the more drops they're making, the more, you know, the greater the risk we run from a risk management standpoint of losing one of these apparatus. And I just hope to God it doesn't happen, but you know, you never know. You know, guys, when we're talking about, I kind of started off the show talking a little bit about cancers and stuff like that, and I want to take a minute to kind of deviate from the fire behavior standpoint. I think we're all aware, and we're doing a adequate job of addressing cancer in the structural aspect. But do you see anybody taking preventative care and being proactive in reducing cancers in the wildland, or do you see just the opposite because of the culture that we have in the wildland?
Yeah, that's, I think you hit it on the head with that one. I see the exact opposite, at least with my agency. You walk around the stations and you got no turnouts in the station, signs everywhere and everything else. You know, but it's perfectly okay to wear your BDU wildland pants out on 4 or 5 grass fires in a day and walk right into the station and hit a recliner and nobody says a word. So I think that it is. It's kind of two different things. When it comes to structural firefighting, everybody's heads up. Everybody has rules and policies. But when it comes to the wildland end of it, nobody blinks twice. And I think, like you said, it's just kind of a culture thing that's been there since day one.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with go ahead, Chief. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna. I'd have to agree with Matt. It's you know, no turnouts inside the station. You know, we're doing hood swaps. You know, we're looking at the new Scott SCBAs to where we can remove the harness assembly and the straps and actually put them through the extractor. But you know, we wear the dual compliant pants. You know, just our normal duty blues are the dual compliant pants. So we get a grass fire, we throw our yellow coats on, we roll out, we do our job, we come back. And nobody thinks about, oh, hey, we just ran a fire in these pants, or, you know, our boots. We're wearing dual compliant boots, wildland station boots, same thing. You run a grass fire, you come back and walk into the station and start making chow for lunch or dinner or whatever it is. And, I think everybody's in the mindset of cancer reduction on the structural side, but I think it kind of goes the wayside on the wildland side.
So, you know, and it's interesting because I see the same thing, and I'm like, okay, you know, and hence it was actually one of our firefighters that brought this to my attention, which is, you know, we go to a structure fire and we say, okay, you know, let's, you know, do a proper doffing of our equipment. Let's, you know, switch hoods. Let's do a gross decon. But yet we will spend 24 or more hours on a wildland fire getting equally as much, the same amount of exposure, if not even more, because we're lacking the respiratory protection as a structural fire. And yet we'll go back to camp and, you know, oftentimes, you know, there's not an ability, there's no shower set up, right? Or, you know, camp hasn't gotten to that point, or, you know, it's IA and, you know, camp's not going to be set up for a couple days. And so, you know, you're just kind of, you know, taking a marine bath and stuff. And, you know, that was why we bought these rinse kits. And you know, we're currently putting into policy that, you know, you'll take some flip-flops and your gym shorts with you, because at the end of your operational period, whether it's 12s or 24s, we want everybody rinsing off, you know, showering. And if that means standing on a wood pallet with the rinse kit and taking a what I call a surfer bath, you know what I mean? Then so be it. But, you know, in addition, we should be equally as vigilant having our personnel through the day when they have the ability to take a break is to, at a minimum, take the wipes and wipe their neck and wipe their face. And, you know, my organization, we've actually moved to purchase a third set of dual compliant pants. We're actually looking at buying a second brush jacket for our personnel. You know, I mean, we're having to spend money, but I think it's money well spent because I don't want our people unnecessarily exposed to cancer.
No, I absolutely. I agree. And I think a lot of times, even for the guys that aren't wearing the dual compliant pants, they're still wearing their, you know, their duty Nomex with their yellows at the top, is, you know, your pants underneath, just because they're covered, they're still going to get, you know, they're still going to get full of carcinogens and everything else. You know, we purchased everybody, all paid staff, two pair of the dual compliant. But the way that this summer's been going, you know, two's just not enough. You know, guys are constantly having to, you know, wash them, especially if they're on an overtime working a 72 or a 96 or whatever. Guys are constantly having to, you know, wash their pants.
Yeah. Yeah. I foresee, I mean, I think given where we're at, I foresee us basically moving to the dual compliant pretty much wholesale and then having like one or two pair of regular pants for dress events. Just because everybody likes the dual compliant to begin with. They look good. We use the work right dual compliant that matches our work right shirts. They look good. They're functional. They're sturdy. They hold up. But for as much wildland as we do through the year, it's just easier just to keep them in dual compliant all year long.
Exactly. We found that most of our guys wear them year round as well. You know, just for the ease, the comfort. You know, it does, you know, you think about it, it does reduce the turnout time. Yes, but I think, like you said, we're in the mindset of, you know, the structural stuff, but we don't really take into consideration the wildland stuff.
Yeah, I agree. What, now you guys have been out teaching a lot. Kind of bring us up to speed with what's going on with that and what you're seeing and kind of what you're looking forward to.
I'll start and Matt can finish. We've got, we Ambassadors of the Craft. We've been doing a little bit of stuff here and there. We were down in the your department last year, Chief. It was great. I know it's been a crazy summer, but I want to get back down there and finish you guys up. But, just been doing, some little, call them homegrown stuff up here in our neck of the woods, and did a great hose and nozzle class a while back, with Elkhart Brass and Key Hose and All-Star Fire Equipment, and had some, really good instructors come in, just a solid day of, flowing water, moving the line. So that was good. We've got Oath Keepers, second year of Oath Keepers coming up here at the end of September. The countdown has started for that. Chris Gilpin with First In, Last Out, back in Ohio. And then Jamie Starcher from Northern Ohio Fools. We put it out, and if I'm not mistaken, I think we were filled up in a matter of a couple days. If that long, 100 spots filled up that quick. We've actually got some California guys going back to take the class this year, so that's exciting. We're looking forward to it. We got a bunch of top notch instructors, Dave and Sean and Mike and all the guys from Southwest Michigan Shut Up and Train. And then Chris Gilpin and Adam from First In, Last Out. Michael Torres is coming in from Chicago. Dustin Martinez. You name it, we're gonna have some really top-notch instructors. Matt and myself and Josh Holden
from Ambassadors of Craft. We're going to be there, and it's just going to be, you know, 3 days of, you know, I probably say this, I'm going to get all kinds of hate mail, but just 3 days of firemanship. You know, like-minded brothers, no egos. Everybody's there to pass on the craft and just, you know, make the fire service better as a whole. So we're really looking forward to Ohio at the end of September.
Yeah, Oathkeepers is going to be a good time.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just saying Oathkeepers is going to be a good time. The countdown is on. All those guys from the Midwest, they're some hard chargers. Those guys kick ass. I love them all. We're going to have Derek Sutherland, too, from East Coast Rescue Solutions. We can't forget about Dance and Derek. It's always awesome to have that guy. But looking forward to that. I've got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm now teaching with Brothers in Battle. Those classes sell out pretty quick, and they're all over the country. I'm going to be doing the Mile High Conference is the next one up, I believe, right after Oathkeepers. And then a few smaller ones in between. And then we have the Firemanship Conference, PDX, which Jason this year will be helping out with the Brothers in Battle Cadre. I'm excited to have him coming up and getting his hands dirty with us. So that'll be fun. But, yeah, it's busy. There's classes all over the place. We have to look at the schedule to keep track of what's going on. But it's been awesome working with those guys. Great bunch of guys. Like Jason said, no egos. They're just there to pass the poison. Extremely passionate people with really good values, and I'm stoked to be a part of it, and stoked to be a part of Ambassadors of the Craft and be going back to Oathkeepers. That's the one I'm really waiting for at this point. I can't wait.
Well, I will say that I am glad you guys are doing that, because I did it for many years, and I'm way too old for doing that nowadays. I get on airplanes nowadays a few times, and that's good enough for me. I had an absolute kick in the pants traveling all over the United States and doing that stuff, but it's a young man's game teaching that hands-on stuff and being on your feet all day. So I definitely appreciate that you guys are out there.
Well, you know, in Mr. Doney's life is going to change a little bit here shortly. He's expecting a baby boy. So, his life's going to change. It's going to have a little Mongo running around the fire service.
Yeah, little Connor's due on the 30th, and I can tell you, Mom's about had it. She's had the worst, hottest, most consecutive dates over 100 pregnancy, and she's not a happy camper at this point. She's ready for it to be over. So, needless to say, when that happens, I do have Oathkeepers. I do have Mile High right afterwards, and she's been awesome, extremely supportive. I couldn't do any of it without her. And she's letting me continue with those, get those done, and then I'm going to take some time off and get a little bonding time and pamper mommy a little bit before I get back on track with traveling around teaching these classes. So we're looking forward to it.
Well, good for you. Good for you, and congratulations. That's going to be a total kick in the pants.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Very good. Well, hey, guys, listen, we're going to cut today short a little bit because we got a whole bunch of stuff going on down here as far as the command center goes, getting things geared up for some more stuff. I appreciate you guys being on. It's always a kick in the pants, and hopefully we can have you guys on next month. Keep us in touch of what's going on. Other than that, you guys got anything for the good of the order before we close it out?
I'd just like to say, you know, thanks to you, Chief, for doing the command show and allowing guys to come on. It's a true honor. And then just to, you know, my brothers out there, Matt Doney, you know, Dave and Justin and Sean and Chris and Derek and everybody that we teach with, you guys are like family. And you know, except like I said, September can't get here soon enough to hang out with some
some like-minded firemen and do some fireman stuff. So, but no, I really appreciate you allowing us to come on, Chief. It's an honor.
Not a problem.
Yeah,
not a problem.
Thanks a lot, Chief. Awesome to be able to talk with you as always. And anytime you want to talk fire stuff, you know I'm all in. So just let us know and we're there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, plan on seeing you guys in Fresno for the famous Fresno Truck Academy.
Absolutely.
This is going to be our 22nd year consecutive of doing the famous Fresno Truck Academy. 22 years in a row, man. That's a hell of a run. And then I'll be doing a class 10 things they didn't tell you when you made chief. And then I'll be doing my impacts of modern ventilation on interior fire behavior as well. So I'm going to have a busy week, but I'm looking forward to getting together with you guys and seeing you at Fresno and having a good meal and maybe a sarsaparilla or two in the Firetown Lounge, which is
Orange Death Night.
Yeah. The Firetown Lounge. And, no, we're going to have a good time. And, again, I do appreciate you guys out there continuing to teach the craft. I truly meant what I said. It's a young man's game. You know, you guys are out doing it on a daily basis. I just sit behind the desk and reminisce about the old days. But it takes people with enthusiasm and courage and grit to get out there and do it. And you guys are continuing to pass that along, and we appreciate it. We appreciate all the guys that are out there doing it as well and support the hell out of them. So with that, we're going to bring the show to an end. Again, this is the Command Show. We wish Andoni the best. We're very thankful for our guest. And as my good friend Timmy Alameda says, we'll see you on the radio.